If you're in a relationship where one or both partners are on the autism spectrum, you've probably noticed that the usual relationship advice just doesn't work quite well for you. You might have read articles, watched videos, or even talked to a therapist, but instead of feeling helpful, that advice often left you feeling more frustrated, disconnected, or misunderstood. Here's why. You're not just speaking different love languages, you're coming from different neurological cultures. And this isn't about broken communication, it's about translation. When you shift your mindset to view your relationship like a cross-cultural partnership, where both people bring strengths, challenges, and a completely valid worldview, you stop trying to fit into someone else's mold and start building a relationship that actually works for the two of you. Today, we'll explore what it really takes to make a neurodiverse relationship thrive, starting with letting go of neurotypical expectations and embracing a mindset of curiosity, patience, and collaboration. So stay tuned. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, and I'm a practicing psychologist, number one Amazon best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and all-around relationship maven with over 35 years of experience helping people just like you. Join me as I teach you actionable tips and strategies to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast. You know who I am. So I'm here today to talk about a topic that I have been working on this episode for months now, I feel like. I keep wanting to just do it great justice, and I really hope I have today. Someone in my Patreon community asked again about this. I'd already been writing it, and I thought, okay, I got to put a fire under my butt and make it happen. So here we are. And I have worked with a lot of neurodiverse couples over the years, and certainly with individuals in a relationship, either with someone who was neurodiverse or they themselves were on the spectrum in some way. And so I feel like, I certainly have a lot of experience in this area, but I really went deep on the research for this. All the research, all the links, you can find under the video if you're watching on YouTube. And on my website, just go to this particular episode on the podcast page or to the corresponding blog post on the Relationship Tips and Tools page, and you will find all the resources, all the things, including the free download I created for today, which I'm really proud of because it's going to really help you. So let's get into it. So, neurodiverse relationships, I want to say this first, aren't dysfunctional. They're different. And I think just that is a really important place to start when we're talking about these kinds of relationships. Excuse me. Wait, I have to have a sip of water. I apologize. Already, right off the bat. And as I'm going to be talking today, I want to be really clear that I'm not talking about the neurodiverse person as needing to be the one who changes to adapt to, their non-neurodiverse partner, or maybe both of you are neurodiverse, but I want to be really clear about that. Again, I'm treating this like a cross-cultural partnership where I wouldn't ask, if someone was from another country and moving here to the US and falls in love and you're together, I wouldn't ask you to give up completely that person to give up their culture. That does, or all the foods they love and the ways they greet people and say hello, all of who they are, who they've become. But you might have to have some things that adapted to the culture for sure, but not everything. And so I want to be really clear, right? So they aren't dysfunctional, they're different. So they need a different relational skill set. The tools and advice that work in neurotypical partnerships often fall flat here. And I know that because trust me, I have given, I've been doing this a long time, right? Decades. And so I've certainly made plenty of mistakes in my years. I'm sure I'll make more to come. You just don't know what you know necessarily, or you haven't had experience with a certain thing. So you're just kind of going on what's been there before. And again, doesn't always work. So I've worked with people and the tools have fallen flat. They've come back over and over and said, you know, this doesn't work. I don't know what you're talking about. I keep trying. And by the way, we all as therapists feel terrible later when we realize that, you know, because we can't be perfect, right? We can't say everything correct every single time. We do have to try and fail sometimes, just like other things. So and I always make that clear to my clients, like, hey, we're going to try this. I'm going to send this homework and it might work. It might not. And if it doesn't, we'll know what doesn't work. It'll help us know what does work. And that's kind of how it goes. So again, they fall flat, you know, typical sort of advice or suggestions, not because something's wrong, but again, because you're not operating in the same framework. So this isn't about, you know, fixing anyone. It's about learning how to truly see and support each other across neurological cultures. And I'm going to keep repeating this because it is a new mindset. So it's a new way to think about these kinds of relationships. So I want you to think about it like this, you know, again, like, let's say there's somebody from the US and someone from Japan. Okay. Because I have a couple like this. And each person, right, there's their own traditions, their languages, their values, their way of expressing connection. And they don't expect each other to automatically just know the right response. Instead, there's a lot more patience, there's more curiosity, there's more grace, there's more collaboration. And so that's the mindset that's needed in a neurodiverse relationship. You and your partner can process emotions differently. You may show love in different ways. You may even speak what feels like, again, two different emotional languages, but those differences don't mean your relationship is doomed. They mean you're building something uniquely your own, a relationship that honors, I hope, both people's wiring, both people's needs, both people's strengths, right? That's the best thing. For me, being Jewish and being married to non-Jews, there's a big cultural divide because Judaism isn't just a religion. It's very cultural too. And I feel like, and so, you know, I've been with men who have embraced, you know, Hanukkah or my Jewish ways or speaking Yiddish or whatever. Gary knows a lot of Yiddish now. He's impressive. Gary knows some Yiddish that some Jewish folks I know don't know. You know, it's really about seeing it as an expansion, not a limitation. I guess I really want that to feel like a thing. I also want to say, because not everybody knows that, and this is a different kind of example, but just, I do, you know, one of my stepsons, the beautiful Justin, is severely autistic. So although I didn't grow up with autism, and I will tell you that I have a brother who's definitely on the spectrum, which we didn't diagnose for many, many years. I don't even know if he's diagnosed now. My brothers don't listen to the podcast, so we can talk about them. But so on the spectrum, so on the spectrum. And, you know, and I have a nephew who's also way on the spectrum. Like, I've definitely been around these relationships for a very long time, I also want to say, and understanding that there's different levels on this spectrum. And again, I have an awesome free worksheet that you can download that you and your partner can use to make real changes to help your relationship. So I'll let you know more about it when I get to my action steps. We'll talk more about it. All right. So let's do a quick look at autism and relationships. I feel like we need to start somewhere. So you know me, I always kind of do the background and then I move through. So autism spectrum disorder. Let's make sure we're all talking about the same thing. Or ASD, autism spectrum disorder. It's a neurodevelopmental condition that affects how people process social interactions, how they process communication, sensory experiences. And it's called a spectrum for a reason. Everyone with autism is different with their own unique challenges, their own unique strengths. It's really very specific. So, and you know what I just remembered? I have a link. Oh, I got to make a note. I have a link to a great autism like test that's free, that's online. I wrote myself a note that I will also link to in the show notes when people aren't sure. And you should go to a qualified health professional and all that. But if you want, I don't know, some initial information, there's a test that a psychiatrist friend of mine turned me on to that's really good. And I have sent people to over the years. So just so we're always clear, I don't get any money or anything from anything I link to like that other than my own products. You know, anytime I'm linking to someone else's book or this, like a test like this, I'm not in any way having a benefit. I'm giving it to you because that's my benefit that I'm helping you. Okay. So here's the thing. How do I want to say this? So despite what you may think, the research shows that autistic people absolutely want and experience love just like anyone else. But because I think it's been misportrayed in the media and in movies and other things, but sometimes the ways they show love or process emotions doesn't always match what a neurotypical partner might expect. And that's where most of the frustration comes in, not because love isn't there, but because there's a mismatch in communication styles and expectations. And so that's what I'm going to help with a lot today. So if you're neurotypical and have ever thought something like, I feel like I'm talking to a wall sometimes, they just don't seem to get what I need in this relationship. Why does everything have to be so rigid with them, you know? Or if you're the autistic partner and you've thought, you know, I don't understand why they're upset. I didn't do anything wrong. I feel like I'm always messing up. I don't even know why. I love them, but I don't express it the way they want me to. And I just don't know how. I'm just using these all examples off the top of my head from clients I've had. Then, you know, stay with me. Because this is all for you, because you're definitely not alone. And there are absolutely ways to bridge the gap. So what's tough about love when autism is involved is if you're in love with someone on the spectrum, they likely communicate differently than you do. Neurotypical people rely a lot on hints, on body language, on unspoken expectations in relationships. Autistic partners, on the other hand, tend to, they communicate more literally, I would say. I always suggest that for neurotypical people to say what you mean and mean what you say, you know, don't expect others to just know what you're feeling. And I would say that in any relationship, wouldn't I? So yeah, even if the exact same situation has happened before, you still have to go there, be clear. You might also feel like emotional connection is missing on some level because autistic people or people on the spectrum often experience deep emotions, but they just don't always express them in the conventional ways. So just because your partner doesn't say, I love you as much as you do, doesn't mean they don't feel it. So I always tell people, you know, pay attention to the ways they are showing love. Maybe they express it by fixing your car or remembering your favorite snack or sharing their special interests with you, sharing things that are important to them with you. Another thing that might drive you crazy are rigid routines or preferences that can feel frustrating. many people on the spectrum love structure and struggle with last minute changes. So you might love spontaneity, but if your partner has a hard time with unpredictability, it's not personal. It's just how their brain works. So, you know, I tell these couples a lot, you know, plan ahead, give them notice if plans might change. Obviously, compromise where possible. Another issue I see in these relationships is that sensory sensitivities can make intimacy tricky. Some autistic people have heightened sensory experiences, which really makes things like touch, certain sounds, crowded spaces, it can make it feel really overwhelming. So there needs to be a lot of communication, asking what feels good for them. Maybe they love deep pressure hugs, but hate light touches or being tickled. Maybe they're okay with sex, but only under certain conditions. You know, there's a lot. There's, again, all people have preferences when it comes to these things. So be aware. Now, if you're the one on the autism spectrum, if you're the one with ASD, You might struggle with social cues and relationship expectations, right? Understanding the unspoken rules of relationships can be really hard. So I'm encouraging you, you got to ask if you're not sure what your partner needs. Say, hey, I really want to make you happy, but I don't always pick up on things. You know, can you tell me what you need? It's okay to ask. And, you know, you also might feel like you're constantly messing up. That's the thing I hear a lot. Neurotypical people often expect certain emotional responses that might not come naturally to you. So be honest. Be honest about how you express love and work on small adjustments to, you know, find a way that works for both of you. You might also struggle with change in the relationship. Routines are comforting, but relationships do require some flexibility. So if change is hard for you, ask for time to adjust rather than, you know, shutting down completely or pushing something away completely. Oh, I was giving little tips in there, wasn't I? Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about how to make it work together. So let's go to the whole thing here. But I didn't even realize I can't help but give you little tips. Okay, hold on. Sipping my water. Also woke up with a big zit today. When does that stop? Someone comment, tell me, when do pimples stop appearing? I mean, my God, there's a ton of wrinkles. It feels only fair that I would not have the pimples. Anyway. Now people are on YouTube are looking, but I have a lot of makeup on, so there. Okay. So how do you make it work together? Let's get into it. It's, again, this mindset shift or seeing your neurodiverse relationships as cross-cultural, right? So when one or both partners are on the autism spectrum, again, you're not just navigating different communication styles, you're really navigating these different neurological cultures. I know I'm repeating myself on purpose. This isn't about one person being difficult or the other needing to like do better. It's about two people coming from two different worlds with different norms, expectations, interpretations of what connection, love, and communication even look like. So one way isn't right, the other isn't wrong on either side. Want to be really clear, it's preferences. And this again is true in every single relationship. I talk about it all the time, that the thing you want or like isn't right. It's just your preference. It doesn't mean it's wrong either. It's your preference. You just have to take it out of the right, wrong mold and move it into how you prefer to be in the relationship or what you're really looking for. So if you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that, from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com. How do I also want to say this? So again, not assuming, I think that's first, is not assuming that someone else sees things exactly the way you do. You know, and because to me, what I see a lot with neurotypical partners is they get very, well, actually both sides, but getting very frustrated and angry that the other person's not getting it. And I don't think you would be the same way, again, if like, you know, if if your partner, if you were from Japan and your partner didn't bow, who was from the United States, or make direct eye contact or understand your idioms, right? There's more patience. You wouldn't assume that the person was being cold or distant. You'd approach the situation again, curiosity, patient, a willingness to learn their cultural lens. That's, again, the same mindset here. It's not broken communication. It's cultural translation. You want to work at becoming really fluent in your partner's primary language. So I want you to think about that. Okay. So let's talk about the 5 mindset shifts you want to make. Okay. So, you know, a lot of everything out there tells us what kind of normal is. And we all walk into relationships with this suitcase full of assumptions. And again, everybody does that. But in a neurodiverse relationship, clinging to those assumptions creates even more pain. So it's really important that you shift around a lot of this, right? So number 1 is replace expectations with curiosity. And again, I would say this to anybody. Your old mindset might be something like, they should know how to comfort me when I'm upset. I shouldn't have to ask. I shouldn't have to ask for reassurance. If they love me, they do X. I'm so tired of this never changing. Things like that, right? I'd like your new mindset to be something like, what helps you feel close to me? When I'm upset, what would be the most helpful way for me to ask you for comfort? What does love look like from your perspective? I completely accept my partner for who they are. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't like to improve some ways we interact, you know? But like, you want to improve how they are, not who they are, whoever your partner is, right? You're not trying to change who they are. It's just some of the how. So to me, the action steps for this are to sit down and brainstorm your unspoken expectations. What are you assuming your partner should just know? Write them down and then ask yourself, have I ever communicated this clearly? Have I ever actually really said this? And think of using conversation starters, right? Like when you're upset, what kind of support do you want? Like what I already said, how do you usually show someone you care about them, right? Maybe if you're earlier in the relationship. And again, this is a good time to mention that, as usual, I'm offering kind of a masterclass of worksheets and journaling prompts in my online group, the One Love Collection on Patreon, right? And just a few examples of what they'll be getting include things to help you do that, all the tips I'm giving. So one giveaway is reframing my relationship through a cross-cultural lens. There's a worksheet for that. I have another, the Neurodiverse Relationship Mindset Checklist, daily ways to stay curious instead of critical. I have a weekly reset, strengthening your relationship as two different cultures. I mean, so if you'd like to join us on Patreon, there are tons of other perks in being a member, you know, ad-free listening, early drops of the podcast, live Q&As with me, where you can ask me anything or go deeper on these topics. But if that feels like too much of a commitment for you, you can also download the entire masterclass bundle for this episode, as always, for $8. And I'll list all the good, those were only a few of the things people are getting. I'll list all of them at the end so you can decide maybe what you'd like to do, okay? If this is an area of interest for you and you really want to go deep on this, I got you. Number 2 is to stop judging differences as deficits. And again, when I did this, I thought, God, this is every relationship, really, but it's especially true here. So your old mindset might be something like, they never want to cuddle, so they must not love me. They shut down when I try to talk about emotions. That's not healthy. They're too rigid and controlling. And I'd love your new mindset to be something like, they show love differently than I do. They may need more time or a different approach to talk about feelings. They find comfort in routine. It helps them feel safe. And I want my partner to feel safe. They find comfort in spontaneity. It helps them feel connected. And I want my partner to feel connected, right? Because it can go either way. And the action steps here are, you know, when you catch yourself labeling something as weird or wrong, or, you know, pause and reframe it as different, not deficient. Okay. Different, not deficient. And again, this goes both ways. So here I would have you write down three behaviors your partner does that confuse or frustrate you. And next to each one, write a possible reason why it might actually be protective, why it might be comforting or functional for them. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, so, and also remember, you don't view the neurodiverse partner as having something that needs to be fixed, while the neurotypical partner's way of being is like the goal, because you're missing the point. Both viewpoints are valid, right? Like I've said, and again, I know I'm repeating some things, but in my experience, when I'm talking about mindset shifts, it's important to keep showing it in a different way. My third action tip after water is learn each other's emotional languages. Think of it like being bilingual, only instead of like English and Spanish, you're learning how to express and receive affection in different sort of neurological dialects. Oh, I just came up with that, neurological. I know. So for example, one partner might say, I love you by, I don't know, fixing the kitchen sink or remembering your favorite snack again. I keep coming back to snacks. You can tell I'm hungry. I need to have lunch soon. All right. The other person might want daily check-ins and verbal affirmation. Okay. So you need to figure that out. So for the action steps, I'm going to tell you this, and I have a good one for you. I want you to download, I created the free giveaway today is How I Show Love worksheet, the How I Show Love worksheet. Okay. I know. Who loves you? I do. That's how I show love, by giving you things that'll hopefully change your life. You can, so I would download it and make two copies of the How I Love worksheet. Each of you, you and your partner, should fill that out individually and then share your answers. Okay. So after this conversation, each of you can make a list of two areas, right? So you download it, you each do it individually, you talk, and then you make this list of two areas. Here's how I naturally express love, fill it out. Here's how I most like to receive love, fill it out. And then compare and brainstorm the two ways. And talk about how you can meet each other in the, you know, not in the middle, but given what you've written. I hate meeting in the middle stuff. It makes me crazy because there's no middle. Just talk about how you can collaborate on this. Maybe there's a new idea. You know, I'm coming from this way. Maybe there's like a third place that with this brainstorming you can think of that's not on anyone's list, but is another way that sort of meets the minds, right? And you can download the free How I Love worksheet by going to the website and looking for this episode on the Relationship Tips and Tools page or on the podcast page, or you can find the link under the video if you're watching me on YouTube. And please always remember to like and subscribe if you're watching me on YouTube. And I would love a comment. I love to answer those. Number four is normalized translation. And this is a biggie, I think. When you're speaking different emotional languages, misunderstandings are part of the deal. The goal isn't to eliminate them. It's to notice them faster and to translate quicker. Okay? So to me, the biggest action step here is, again, you have to be mindful. So if you have not downloaded my free mindfulness starter kit yet, you have to. See, because you got to get better at noticing when these misunderstandings are happening in the moment. Okay, so you got to work on the mindfulness. And I usually have people create like a shared phrase, something like, hey, I think we're speaking different languages right now. You know, to call kind of loving attention to a miscommunication or to a frustration, it's really important. And when you do hit a rough patch, because you will, you want to ask each other, what did you mean when you said that or did that? Here's what I thought you meant. Can we clarify? Something like that. You want to have a conversation to clarify. And over time, these check-ins become a normal loving part of your rhythm, not signs that the relationship is broken or in big trouble or anything else. Okay. And number five is you need to celebrate the strengths of each culture. So don't, you know, neurodiverse couples have some serious superpowers, like all couples do in their own way. And you might be more intentional. I think that's often a superpower. More direct, more reflective, less performative, more willing to build a relationship that works for you, not one that just sort of follows someone else's script. That's really amazing. So action steps here are to take time to name and celebrate what works. Make a list together. Here's what I admire about your approach to love. Here's what we do well as a couple that's different from others. And I love it. And this is part of what makes us special. And I want to be clear every time I talk about love and how you express it, I'm not talking about those love languages, you know, Chapman's love languages, which I did a whole episode on them. Please step away from the love languages. You know, I'm not talking about like acts of service and giving gifts and words of affirmation. I'm not talking about any of that. I am talking about, again, how you express things, okay? Which might you think fall into those categories, but I'd like you to get away from those categories because there's really not much scientific evidence behind those categories, as I mentioned in the podcast episode. I think there are many ways they're really debilitating because people think like, well, you have to show me in my language. That's the way I feel. That's such bullshit. And it gets you caught, especially in neurodiverse relationships, because you can't, again, here you are pigeonholing again into some neurotypical kind of thing. How do you expect that to work for you? You can't. And how do you expect those languages to work for you if you're from different like cultures, countries? They don't, because of all of the different meanings things have. I was thinking, and I have a good friend who's Japanese, and she said this is true in other Asian cultures, not just hers. But when you bring over a gift, like if I brought a hostess gift and she put it to the side and, you know, and said, thank you so much, and had it in another room. And we were talking later and she said that like people get upset sometimes because they want you to open the gift in front of them. You know, they want to see your face and like, look what I brought. Come on, open it up, you know? And for her and her family and how she grew up in Japan, that was rude. That's considered rude, right? So even if you use these love languages with like gifts and things like that, how you show love with gifts or how you receive gifts or whatever might be very different even within the quote unquote language. So again, that's not what I'm talking about today. So like, get rid of that from your head. All right. So, and again, even if things are hard, all of these are ways that help you stay connected to what's working, not just what's challenging. I find that people in neurodiverse relationships really, it just feels like a bunch of challenges as opposed to thinking of it differently, right? That these are, again, it's very kind of, you know, I love the Stoics. Life is happening for me, not to me. There's, you know, this is, everything's not a challenge and hard or an obstacle, you know, get your mind into a different framework about it. Okay. I feel like I should have some final thoughts. I'm going to have some final thoughts on, I want to say this, neurodiverse relationships, I think they really require a shift in expectations, not because they're broken again or doomed, but because they operate by different cultural rules. So when you approach each other like two loving people navigating a cross-cultural connection, you really make space for grace, for patience, for kindness, for openness, right? For learning, for translating, for loving in ways that might not look typical, but are still deeply meaningful to the two of you. This isn't a relationship that fits inside one of those Hallmark movies. It's not standard issue love, but it can be something even better, custom built, real, resilient, right? And I just think that's incredibly special. So I think that's everything I want to say today. So that is it for today. As always, I'm going to tell you what all the things that are part of the masterclass bundle for this episode. And if you're in my Patreon already, what you're going to be getting in the different tiers if you want that. So stay tuned if you want to learn more. Otherwise, love you to pieces. Have an amazing week. And thank you. Thank you for being here with me. I'd love to hear how this works for you. So please comment under the video. And if you're there, or send me an email or anything else to let me know. All right. Have a good week. And the rest of you who are staying, Remember that there's the free How I Love, How I Show Love worksheet. So I want to say that. And then tier one, you know, which is my inner circle, you know, you're getting journaling prompts for, and what I did was I separated. There's journaling prompts for autistic partners and there's journaling prompts for neurotypical partners. Right? So kind of like loving someone with ASD and having ASD, right? And then I have 20 conversation starters for understanding and connecting in a neuro in a neurodiverse relationship. And then for tier two, right, you get everything in tier one. And tier two is my love accelerator. You are getting reframing my relationship through a cross-cultural lens worksheet, which I already mentioned, the neurodiverse relationship mindset checklist, which I mentioned, daily ways to stay curious instead of critical. That's what that is. And then there's also a weekly reset, strengthening our relationship as two different cultures. And there's so many things in this episode. It's not even funny. And a neurodiverse date night planner. Okay. I know. And then tier three, like that's not enough. Like I haven't already done so much. Tier three, which is my love, VIP love lab. You're getting everything in tier one and tier two, obviously the free download and a guided reflection worksheet, understanding and strengthening your neurodiverse relationship. Okay. A relationship communication cheat sheet, which I'm calling like understanding neurodiverse differences and bridging the gaps. A sensory compatibility checklist for couples. Wait, and actually, I think that's it. I'm acting like there's more. No, that's it. Okay. That's a lot. I know. So if you're still listening, you can get all of that for $8. I can't think of a better deal. And if you're in my already part of the One Love Collective, you know, you're already getting all the other things. I hope you've been, if you are still listening and you're in the One Love Collective, I really hope you're taking part in the community chats. You know, there's a few of us. It's always that way, right? There's a few people who are doing most of the chatting, but there's so much room in there for all your voices. I'd love to hear from you. It's really a great place. We're now doing Wednesday where we talk about wins, two wins you've had that week and one thing you'd like to work on. It's a great accountability. We're doing that on Wednesdays now. I'm just saying, it's really fun. I don't know. It's fun. I think everyone thinks it's fun. It's great. It's such a great place to find support and more love. And right now, I mean, we could all use more love. All right. That's it. I'm here. I feel you. Thank you for being with me. I really do feel our relationship and it's always really meaningful for me. So thank you. All right. Mwah. Love you. Have a great week. Thank you for listening to the Relationships Made Easy podcast with wonderful me, Dr. Abby Metcalf. And I've got two quick things to say. Just give me one more minute. First, I love spending this time with you, and I work hard to make sure every single episode is going to help you move from any feelings of frustration or resentment or anxiety to that connected, hopeful confidence. That's always my goal. So if you have any ideas for a future episode or just want to say hi, let me know what the podcast is doing for you. Anything, you can email me at abby@abbymetcalf.com. How simple is that? And the second thing I want to say is if you like the podcast, you're going to go crazy, crazy for my book. My book is really good. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on Amazon or on my website under the shop section on my website at abbymetcalf.com. It's called Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. And even if your partner will do a thing, the book will still really help you. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.